Recording. Well, good morning again. The Faith and Justice Committee here at the church is sponsoring this three-week series on living with differences. And the reason we're doing it is that all of us are facing so many differences in our life today. And there are differences of opinion about politics, or ethical decisions? What are our points of view on racism? There are people that we need to understand more because of differences in cultural background. And we're even finding strong differences about educating our children. So, because those differences are many and our disagreements are pretty strong, we thought that it would be a good idea to start with a series about how do we face these differences. And hopefully, because we're here at Westminster, we also have a common connection in that we believe that God is present with us as we face these differences, and that God wants to guide us as to how do we approach them. What do we do with all this difference? So, before I introduce today's speaker, I thought it would be good if we started with a moment of prayer. Dear God, we are gathered here today seeking your help. We live in a world that is full of differences. Some of them are a delight to us, and some of them are distressing. Please be with us. Guide our thoughts, sustain us when we feel threatened, and fill us with your uncompromising love. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen. So I'm here to introduce our current speaker for today. We have invited three people who are talented and committed professionals to talk with us about facing differences and finding a way to do that in love. But today we have Dr. Marta McClinic-Camot with us to begin our discussion. And of course, Marta's face is going to be so familiar to so many of you because Marta has grown up in the church. And she left for a while to get her degrees. She got a degree at Bucknell, a master's at the University of Michigan, and a PhD at the University of Maryland. But then she came home to live here in the community, to join the church as an adult and be a strong participant here. And she and her husband, Patrick, and their four kids, Carter, Tyler, Trevor, and Kate, are all active participants in the church, along with their parents who give them a lot of support. And we can see them participating in all the tasks of the church and the programs of the church, and so they're familiar to you. But you may not be familiar with the professional, Dr. Marta McClinic-Camot. She is a professor of social work at Penn West University, which is the new name for California University of Pennsylvania. She is a professor of social work and also is the director of the Women and Gender Studies. She has developed a distinguished career because she's driven by her desire, which is passionate, about nurturing relationships. And she does that through her work in teaching and through her work as a therapist with an agency called Strong Foundations. She sees individuals, couples, and teens for therapy. And if that's not enough and doesn't keep her busy enough, she's got this family to take care of. She's got her volunteer work in the church and in the community with the schools. She's got the teaching and the therapy work. But she has recently joined an organization with some of her colleagues called Cultural Humility and Ethical
Equity. Equity Collaborative.
Ethical
Equity.
I'm sorry, Equity
Collaborative.
I've got it wrong. Cultural Humility and Equity
Collaborative. Yeah.
And she has worked with these this group. And she's going to share with us some her work today. Thus, the papers and pencils at the end of the row, because she will be asking you to use those sometime in this presentation. So we are glad to have Marta here. She has integrated what her beliefs and her passion in everything she does. It doesn't matter where she is, whether she's working as a professional, living with her family, hanging out with people at the church. She does what she does everywhere. And I am so glad that she's here. I think that we are blessed to have her as part of our church family. And I'm honored to call her friend. So let me ask you to please welcome Dr. Marta McClinic Camo.
Thank you, Barbara. My gosh, that was quite an introduction. Thank you. And I can't believe how you memorized all of that information. That was very impressive. I will be using notes much more than that. So, but yes, I have had the great fortune of knowing Barbara and Hetz for a very long time, thanks to my parents and being friends with them for a long time. And actually, when I finished college and I met with Hetz and Barbara, it changed my career path because I hadn't really known about social work. And then I met with Hetz and Barbara in their practice, and they introduced me to this discipline and said, I think that might be a good fit for you. And I looked into it and they were exactly right, which led me to Michigan to get my master's in social work and how I pursued my path in that. So very lovely to be introduced by you, and so appreciative of the impact the two of you have had. And of course, Hetz, along with a priest, married Pat and me at this church. So very close to our hearts in lots of ways. So thank you all for being here today. I'm glad to see all of you. And those of you who are at home, welcome. I'm not sure how many we have at home, but I'm glad to see you all here. I'm going to start a little bit with talking about a concept called cultural humility. And I'll be doing just a little bit of that, because that's also a piece that's going to be talked about next week with a colleague of mine, Dr. Ozzy Block. And she's going to be talking about that related to immigrants and refugees. I'm going to be talking about cultural humility just a little bit to use as a piece for our own reflection today and as part of our dialogue that we're going to have. So I'll talk for just a bit. Then I'm going to ask you to do an exercise working together on using the identity pie. And then we're going to reflect back together as a group on that. Okay. So if you could go to the next slide, please, Ted. So when you, it's skewed off just a little bit, but when you look at this slide up here, lots of different faces are up here. And if I tell you this is a slide of pictures from a Target ad, you might have certain things that come to mind. Whether you're aware of it or not, there are probably certain assumptions that you make about who those people are, if it's a Target ad, why they're there. If I tell you it's from National Geographic magazine, that may shift your perspective a little bit on who those people are and what their identities are. Part of what we're going to be talking about today are the identities that we have internally, the identities that other people assume about us, how to communicate about some of those things, and how to become aware of some of the biases that we may have or assumptions we may make about other people just by taking a look at them. So this slide, I can see varied, for the sake of time, I would usually ask for some feedback. For the sake of time, I'm just gonna move through. You can see varied ages are here, different skin tones are here, different textures of hair, possibly different ethnicities, there are a lot of different genders. There are different identities that when we see them, we make certain assumptions about people. So when, could you click twice, please, Ted? Thank you. So I want you to pause for just a second and think about who are these people? What are their identities? And I would suggest to you, one, that they are intersectional. And what I mean by that is they have multiple identities that are overlapping or intersecting at the same time that make each of them uniquely who they are. So for example, as I stand before you today and I identify as a person who is white, as a woman, as a heterosexual person, as a married person, as a mom, I could go through a whole list of identities. Those identities intersect to make me uniquely who I am. Now, there are others here that I know personally have a lot of those similar identities, but there are differences that we've had in terms of our life experience or other identities that may significantly impact that difference. So if I would change one thing, for example, if I identified as a lesbian woman, that would significantly alter my experience, my life experience, and my perspective on the world because of that varied identity. Okay, so the intersectional piece is that unique spot where all of those varied identities meet together to give us our own personal unique identity. That's part of what we'll be talking about today with the identity pie. Another piece of the identity is that it's multidimensional. And in this context, I'm talking about that of from our own perspective versus other people's perspectives. So for example, when you meet someone, upon view of them, you may have certain assumptions about who they are, which may or may not be accurate. And most of us have had that experience at some time, right? You've met somebody maybe at work and maybe you asked a woman about her husband and then it turns out there's not a husband. Either she's single, she's married to a woman, there are other things that can come up. A lot of us have certain assumptions about people's identities that may or may not be accurate. So the multidimensional piece is who we are factually compared to how others view us or assume that we are. That's the multidimensional piece. And then the contextual piece is how we show up given the different environments that we're in. So what Barbara said about me to introduce me, there were selected facts about me that were presented in this group. If I was entering a therapy session, that's probably not the information that I would give to tell the therapist about my identity, right? So we select those things based on what the context is. If you're going for a job interview, you say one thing about who you are. And if you're hanging out with your friends on a Friday night, that's a very different identity that you show up with. So that's the contextual piece. And all of those make up who we are. And that's the richness of what each of us bring. Could you move to the next slide, please? So historically, we've focused on cultural competency, which involves this framework that you can see on here, brings together knowledge, skills, and self-awareness. Cultural competency is a concept that grew out of working in the medical field that was trying to help medical professionals to become more aware of the patients or clients that they were working with, of trying to improve their knowledge, skills, and self-awareness to make them more effective and to make sure that they were treating the person that was in front of them. And it's a really valuable concept. Cultural humility grew out of that because the cultural competency implied that we could try to seek more and more knowledge about different cultures so that we could eventually get to a place where we were competent and able to work with a wide variety of people from diverse backgrounds. Cultural competency takes that another level. Ted, can you move to the next slide, please? This is from Murray Garcia and Turvalon, who talk about cultural humility principles. And this adds a few other components to it. One is that cultural humility is about lifelong learning. So we know that culture is constantly changing. So to be culturally humble, we need to accept that we never get to a place of truly knowing either about cultures or about individuals. Because like I said before, even if there was someone in here that we had 10 identities that all aligned with each other, we would still have unique experiences where we would need to get to know each other. So in preparation for working with immigrants, for example, that the church is doing now, if we learn about a certain culture where the people that we're working with are coming from Morocco, and we learn about that culture, that gives us valuable information. But the culturally humble approach says that we also need to make sure we are learning about those people who are coming there. That the culture can teach us, learning about Morocco can teach us a lot of information. But if we come from a culturally humble perspective, we are committed to this lifelong learning about their culture. We need to recognize from a culturally humble approach and challenge the power imbalances that exist. So the example that I gave of identifying as a heterosexual person or someone who is from the LGBT community, there are inherent power imbalances that are there that we know in the past less than 10 years, access to marriage just changed based on that identity. So that's a piece of the imbalance that is present there as an example. The fact that people who have a same-sex partner often question, is this a safe workplace for me to put a picture of my partner on my desk? That's representative of a power imbalance that's there, that's inherent to that. And it comes up in lots of different identities that we have. Gender is another clear example where girls, teens, women are often given the message that it's not safe for you to be by yourself, that you need to be with other people. That's an inherent power imbalance that's there that's based on identity. Okay, so those are all just examples. So recognizing that that exists in a lot of the different identities is another piece of cultural humility. And the last piece, which we're not going to talk about today, but it's about institutional accountability. So if we believe that identities exist, that there are inherent power imbalances, what will we do to try to make a positive change for justice, accountability, trying to realign some of those power imbalances? We're going to stay more on the individual perspective today, though. Can you move to the next one, please, Ted? So again, cultural humility takes that cultural competency perspective with those three parts of self-awareness, knowledge, and skills, and then also adds in there the recognition of blind spots that we may have, biases that we may have. For example, Barbara was kind enough to do this introduction of me with telling some of my background. We know from solid research that men are more likely to be assumed to be experts in topics if they're presenting somewhere than women are as a comparison. Now that's a broad statement. It's not always true, but research has consistently shown that. However, if someone speaks for that woman and says, this is a person who has educational background or has different experiences, gives credibility to that woman, that then ups her identity and it's assumed that she is more as capable. So that's an example of how those identities can be shifted depending upon what the context is and how others talk about her. Cultural humility also adds in not making assumptions. So we go in to conversations with a place of learning, seeking to understand, not assuming we know things because people are from certain backgrounds. So if I am of one political party and I enter a conversation with someone else who is of a different political party, which I think right now is one of the most divisive identities that we have, if I don't assume that because they affiliate with a certain political identity and instead seek to understand what they believe and why they believe it, that's going to be a place for connection and understanding, right? So that's about not making assumptions. And then also being open to other ways of being and doing and working to change solutions and structures. That's also a part of the cultural humility piece. Can you go to the next slide, please, Ted? So the principles that we base cultural humility on, that we commit to ourselves as an ongoing process of compassion, self-awareness, and inquiry, those are key with cultural humility, okay? And involved with that is self-reflection, with that empathy and compassion. We need to be open and be teachable. So rather than seeking to tell others what our opinion is, we're seeking to learn from others to help inform our own perspectives. And we always need to bear in mind that the social structures have self that have shaped the reality are present for all of us here. So that's another piece that's at the institutional level, which I think Dr. Block will talk a little bit more about next week, because we're going to focus on the individual piece right now. But that's another component of it. Can you go to the next slide, please, Ted? So this is a slide is a bit of a repeat of that, but I want to ask all of you, in hearing some of these definitions, what are your thoughts about the concept of cultural humility? It's one piece. And I'm wondering, why do you think self-awareness may be fundamental to working with people of diverse backgrounds? And Ted's going to come around with the microphone so that people online can hear.
And if anybody online wants to say something, just pipe up.
What are your thoughts about the concept of cultural humility is the first question.
Well, so I'll offer one thought, and that is, although the framework is new, the idea of don't assume because of what it makes of you and me is an old one.
Yes, for sure.
I had an experience when I was in graduate school where I was an assistant in a class, and we took students from other countries to the library to show them where the library was, how they could use it. And there were mostly men, but there was a woman from Saudi Arabia who was there with her husband because they were getting a degree. And she came to me and said, she had a question about something in the library. And I, speaking out of my experience being in the library, said, oh, well, you know, I don't know the answer to that question, but you could ask this person over here. And she just got very quiet. And she said, well, I can't really speak to that person because that's against my culture. It was a man who was the librarian, and she was uncomfortable going to talk to him. And I just was so surprised it was that would be, I mean, she was a wonderful human being and a great student, and she wanted to honor her background. And I needed to learn that.
That's a great example. Yeah, that's a great example. And a place where I love that your response was being open to learning about that, because sometimes when we make a mistake like that, we can feel embarrassed, maybe get defensive, maybe respond in ways that are focused on us. And what I heard in your response was you needed to be aware of what was going on for her and her needs. And so that shifted your understanding, working with her and others probably from a similar background, of how you would handle that differently next time. That's a great example of how that can change and shift cultural humility. Yeah, Barb.
Well, there's always the visual perception. When you see a person, do you, you know, make assumptions of who they are, what their background is, you know, where their status is in life, where they're from? It can often, you know, cloud, you know, how we think about people and answers we expect to get from them.
Yep, for sure. For sure. And this is getting into a slightly different concept, but that's part of how we all learn. So from the beginning, if you think about how you teach kids how to learn, we teach them about categorizing different things. So we ask kids to put the triangles in one pile, the squares in another, and the circles in another, or put the orange objects here, the red objects here, the blue objects here. So part of how we teach kids is through scaffolding, right? So we teach them certain concepts, and we teach them how to group things so that they can learn how to understand their world. And those are important skills to be able to learn. What happens is we also do those things with identities. So kids learn about what does it mean to be a boy and what does it mean to be a girl, or what does a person look like who's of this age and what does a person look like who's of this age. And there's nothing wrong with that. We just also often have expectations, assumptions that go along with those identities. So part of the cultural humility is being aware that we do that, that we categorize people, and then questioning our own assumptions about that, like Barb was saying. So if I see someone who is of a different race than I am, if I have a certain assumption that comes to my mind, which I do because I've been socialized, then if I stop myself and think, why am I making that assumption? And then allow myself to learn who that person really is, rather than going from bias about what I'm looking at, that can be really helpful from a culturally humble approach.
And we have a comment from the chat from Doug Mitchell. Earlier in my life, we Americans took pride in our quote unquote heritage, largely to affirm socially how varied origins have created a society of immigrants having great value. Nowadays, as soon as I hear someone talking about identities, I feel defensive, a defensive reaction, as if I'm being asked to categorize myself or to permit a stereotype to classify me. I'd just like to suggest that our uniquenesses are more helpful to describe who I am, my interests, my hobbies, my family's unusual aspects, rather than some combination of assumptions about my varied identities. Got to admit, a lot of what we discussed here is based on fearing that introducing oneself to another might somehow offend the other, rather than being based on showing our desire to befriend the other and to learn what very human aspects they exhibit.
Okay, if I got all of that, I think that last part, thank you, Doug. I think that last part of assuming that there was an intention to be judgmental is not the message that I was trying to give. And when I say judgment, it's not even necessarily a judgment. It doesn't necessarily mean to be a judgment in a negative way. It's an assumption about who that person is, but not necessarily saying that it's a negative thing that they are different or that I'm identifying something within them. It's just that that first moment comes of where we, if I see someone and identify them of thinking that it's a woman, I have certain things that come to my mind with that. It's not a judgment about being a woman. It's just something that comes there. And because I've been socialized, I have certain expectations that may come along with that. Just like if I walked in here wearing cutoff shorts and a crop top, you would make certain assumptions about me that may or may not be factual, right? I'm the same person. It's just I have different things, different clothes that I'm wearing, but we make an assumption about them. I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just different beliefs about it. So I think Doug and I are in line in the sense that I think he was speaking to cultural humility of recognizing that great diversity that's within each person. I just add on that the other piece is that there's a component to us having certain assumptions about people because we recognize different identities within them. But thanks for sharing, Doug.
Yeah. If I may chat just a little more. When I was growing up,
I had two older sisters, an older brother. I had a mother and a dad. My sisters were allowed to give me a bath. I could not imagine my father or my brother giving me a bath. So I sort of got to see girls as more caretaking. Uh-huh. And boys, they would talk about sports and doing things and work and things like that. So I entered life with the idea that girls and boys were different in their personalities. Girls and women were more caring and boys were just tough.
Thank you for sharing that. Yes, that's a great example. And that is a piece of self-awareness of some of the messages that you indirectly got about gender and what that means you can or cannot do based on gender. And because of timing, I'm gonna switch. Did you wanna say something real quick, Bobby?
And while I'm taking the mic to Bobby, Doug, I know you wanted to say something or explain something.
Yeah, just very quickly, what I was trying to do was simply to say that there are multiple ways to invite or initiate contact with another. Some of these certainly involve avoiding offense. But I remember some very good, very elderly people who introduced themselves to me in a very positive way, as if they chose to befriend me. And so the positive approach of acknowledging one's own humanity, one's own eccentricity, some of those ways are very helpful, at least they were for me, to befriend another person and to create a relationship rather than kind of a tentative trying not to offend other people. There is that need to be humble, no question about it. And Marta, your lesson, I think, is extremely helpful, especially in an international context and in international mission. But there's also that other side of we Americans being a blend and being a nation of immigrants and a great pride coming from that kind of thing. And so sometimes our own ability just to be friendly can be a positive way to approach a relationship.
Thanks, Doug. Yep. And I think what you're saying really applies to that cultural humility approach. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, Bob.
I'm just going to openly admit that one of my faux pas last summer when Tom was in the hospital, and this woman came to give a report on his condition, and I had a question, and I said, well, I'll wait until the doctor comes and ask that question. I should have known better, but, you know, because of course she was the doctor. But then I thought about, is the nurse less valuable than the doctor? So I sort of got into that thing in my mind. So it's a complicated story, isn't it?
It is. That's a great example and a common one too, Bobby, that happens. It still happens today. It's a common example. There's a joke connected to that. I'm not funny, so I won't tell the joke now, but it's connected to that too, of about assumptions about who plays what roles in different kinds of work environments, that's very common. And the response that you had was self-reflection and learning from that. And then you took it to another level of thinking about different jobs and how we value different jobs, which is another component of being culturally humble. So that's a great example. So we're going to, if you can advance, please, Ted. Part of the important piece of this is being able to know ourselves and to be able to reflect on ourselves so that then we can also, and that helps to understand some of our assumptions and biases. And then we can seek to understand others as well. Can you move forward another one, please, Ted? So I'm gonna ask you to take that paper and pencil that's in your pew, and we're gonna do an activity together. So we're gonna try to enhance our self-awareness to reflect on who we are by naming some of our identities that are most important to who we are. So self-awareness is the goal. There's no right or wrong answer in this. This is about you. But what I am going to ask you to do is to not look off your friend's paper and to just write for yourself about what your identities are. If you can move to the next one, please, Ted. So this is identity pie that we're going to do. And I'd like, does everyone have paper and pencil? Is there anyone who needs one? Okay. What I'd like to ask you to do is to draw a big circle on your paper to fill up the circle, because you're going to write inside the circle. So you want to use as much space as you can. And then I would like you to break up that circle into a pie. You're going to write down 5 to 10 different identities that you have. I am purposely making this vague because I want you to decide for yourself what those identities are that you have. And this is part of the point where it's important that you just think about yourself and not look at what others are writing down. Okay, so 5 to 10, that's up to you. If you would like to make the parts that feel bigger or to take up more space in your life, bigger pieces of pie, you're welcome to do that. If that causes you anxiety, don't do that. So this is, again, an exercise in self-awareness and self-reflection. There's not a right or wrong. You're going to do 5 to 10 identities that you identify with, and you're going to write them, creating a pie inside that circle about you. Okay, I'm going to give you about 2 minutes to do that.
Those of you on Zoom, I'm counting on you to provide your own piece of paper and pencil.
Someday we'll probably be able to teleport that to them to get it to them somehow. Amazon will have instant delivery or something like that. I don't know. About 30 more seconds. Okay, Ted, is it possible to put the people online in a breakout room so they can dialogue without needing to hear their whole dialogue over the top?
In another universe, yes.
Okay. 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 So the people online, you may need to do just some self-reflection on that. I don't know that we're going to be able to do a group share because then everyone in the chapel will be hearing your conversation. So maybe if you can just hold for about 10 minutes.
I would say that certainly, because we can't really read your chat very well here in the chapel, if you want to chat with each other for the folks who are online, you can use the chat function of Zoom to share ideas with each other. Last time I looked, there were about nine or 10 folks.
Oh, welcome. I didn't know you all were
online.
There.
So you can certainly chat with each other.
Okay.
There through the text chat.
Okay. And could you advance to the breakout groups identity pie slide, please? Thank you. So we are going to do some breakout groups right now. You're going to have about 10 minutes. I would suggest if you are open to it, that you move around and talk with people that you don't already know. I know most of you are sitting with friends or family members that you know each other well. So breaking up to speak with others, I think would be a really good experience in this exercise. What I'm going to ask you to do is you're going to have about 10 minutes. So you want to divide up your time evenly, have 3 to 4 people in a group. I want you to just share what the identity is of just naming them because of time. And if there is an identity that you don't feel comfortable speaking to the group, if it's something that's private, you don't need to share that, but share whatever of the identities that you wrote down that you're comfortable sharing. And then I would like each of you to choose one of the identities that you wrote down in the pie that you want to articulate a little bit more and explain why you chose that identity and what it means to you with your group that's there, okay? And the others in the group, your role while one person is talking is to stay focused, to be open, to listen and learn about them. If you have enough time to ask a few questions to try to learn more about why they chose that identity and what it means to them, okay? So you're gonna have 10 minutes for your group. So depending on how many people you have in your group, you may have 2 to 3 minutes for each person. So that's gonna be brief, but I'll give you a little bit of a warning too. Make sure everyone has a chance to share, okay? So if you're open to moving a little bit and sharing, 3 to 4 people in a group for about 10 minutes to share your identity pie.
Seems like a good time to go water the plants. I'll be walking.
Okay.
Are you clear? Any questions? Okay. Everyone clear? Any questions? Everybody okay? Everyone clear? Any questions? Everyone clear on what you're doing? Any questions? Yes, yeah, okay. Any questions? Are you clear on what you're doing?
I can move my things here too, so you have more.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, we're 5 minutes through, so you're about halfway through, so just make sure you're keeping track to make sure everyone gets a turn to speak, please. Okay, folks, 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left. Make sure that everyone's had a chance to share, please. 2 minutes.
We have a 2 minute warning for those of you online who are busy chatting away in the text box.
Okay, everyone, for time's sake, I'm going to need to stop you there. I love the energy of this group, and I'm so grateful that you all dove right in. We have about 10 minutes left, so I need to ask you to come back to the large group together. If you want to return to your seats, you can. If you're comfortable where you are, that's fine too.
For those of you online, we're coming back to order. The chit chat is toning down.
I appreciate the play by play, Ted.
we have embraced the breakouts with vigor here in the chapel.
Everybody, thank you so much for diving right in, engaging in the conversation with each other. I am jealous because I wanted to jump in with you. I wanted to hear some of your dialogue. That was exciting to see how you all got invigorated and joined in. I want us to use this time to come back together to reflect a little bit, not necessarily about sharing specific identities that you talked about, but thinking about this from a process perspective and thinking about it a little bit differently in terms of reflection. So again, thank you for jumping in and all the sharing that you did. I hope you got to learn a little bit more about each other. It seemed like you all were eager to share and eager to listen. So that was fantastic. I'm going to ask you for just a second first to reflect on a question, and not to discuss this one, but to just think for yourself, why did you choose the pieces of your identity that you did to write in your circle? Is it because there's a cultural message that those pieces are important? Is it that they are the center pieces of who you feel like you are? There could be other influences, but I want you to think for yourself of, why did you choose the identities that you did to include in your pie? And then connected to that, if you did or did not choose to share all of the identities in your pie with your group, just reflect a little bit on why you may have felt comfortable or not comfortable with sharing the identities that you did. Okay, so just reflect on that for yourself. Because in these groups, there are often people who have certain identities that they consider to be inherent to who they are, but they don't feel comfortable making those public or talking about those with other people. And that's an important piece. And there are others who have identities that they feel comfortable with all of those pieces of who they are, and they feel like they can share that. And that's important too. And that impacts how we show up in the world, what we feel like we can share with other people. So I just want you to reflect on that for yourself for a little bit. Are you someone who didn't feel like you needed to keep some of those things private? Maybe you didn't even write it down on your pie, but it's something you consider to be central to your identity. And others were probably happy to share lots of things. So just think about that and reflect on it. Next, I'd like to ask, what identity was very important to you, but did not show up on someone else's? So a certain category of identity maybe that showed up for you that was part of your identity, but someone else, they didn't think to write it down maybe, or they chose not to write it down. I'm wondering about that. Did you find that in any of your groups? I'm asking you to share now. Yes. Thanks for clarifying. Now you get the mic.
All right. Something that was different, right? Yeah, that what you're
showed
saying.
Up for you, but
showed up for me. One thing that I mentioned that economically stable was something that I identify with. That like I feel like we are in a position where like I don't consider us in the economic bracket that we really are, because I just don't feel like that's who we are, but here we are. I mean, we're public educators, and yet here we are. But we are, we were able to maintain jobs. We were able to, in some cases, add 3 or 4 more jobs. And that's a part of who we are, that we didn't have to worry about other things as part of that. And so I brought that up because that's something that I reflected on, and the people in my group perhaps either didn't or did differently. So
thank you. Ted, Charlotte.
This is maybe a little bit tangential, Marta, but the three of us had an interesting observation. None of us put down our race. And I said to them, it reminds me of that old saying of we're conspicuous by our absence. But we began to sort of mull over that. And that maybe it's because we're so used to it that we're part of that dominant group. I don't know that there's an answer to it, but it was just really clear. We just, none of us, the three or four of us working together, none of us put it down. And it was just sort of so obviously missing somehow. I just thought it was a bit of a puzzlement.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. That is a key. Did you want to add something onto that? No, okay.
I think that's a really key point. What was the phrase that you used? Conspicuous by its absence. That's a very applicable phrase to that. And that's part of the example of the contextual piece. If we were sitting in a room that was, at least by observation, racially diverse, I think it's much more likely that a lot of people would have written that down. When we live in communities that are largely segregated by race, that's something that becomes a blind spot for us sometimes. So as someone who grew up in a community that was very white, even more white than it is now, I was not aware of my race, really. I went to see a Spike Lee with my boyfriend, Spike Lee movie with my boyfriend, who's now my husband, when I was in high school. And that was really my first awareness around race, because almost everyone around me was white. And it was not until I stepped into other opportunities to learn about people with different racial identities, different experiences based on race, that I became aware of my whiteness and how that impacts my experience in the world. So I think that's a great example, Charlotte, of, again, not positive or negative necessarily, but it can be really helpful to have an awareness when we're in that dominant group. At least in this moment, we are in the dominant group of whiteness, right? That's overwhelmingly, I don't know, of all your racial identities, but for the most part, I think people in this room identify as white. And so that becomes something that we are blind to, of that presence, of that identity. Thanks for bringing that up. Mm-hmm.
That it probably would have come up from other people and would have been more of a, in a sense, a contrast, a comparison for us.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Thanks for sharing that. Another question that I have for you is, what identities on your pie were you born into, and which ones did you claim, and how do you feel differently about those? Do you feel differently about those?
Anyone online wish to pipe up?
Flo had her hand up.
This was sort of, I put this in my pipe.
I put, I'm old. You know, I'm in the category of old. And I was like, do I really want to put this? Because there's a lot of negative about it.
And I think that's a really important point though too, Flo. I think that's an important point, because that is very culturally bound about how we value age. So if your perspective is, I didn't want to put this down because there's a negativity that's associated with that, that doesn't have to be. No. That's socialized into us, or we get some of those messages around that, that then sometimes we hold on to. There may be others in the room who embrace that, of feeling pride and happiness about age.
How you absorb that into your view of yourself in a negative way, and then that holds you back in your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's called self-stigma.
Yes. Yes. And there are other cultures around the world that handle it differently, that it's a source of pride, of it elevates you to a certain status in the community, right? So, yeah. Yeah. We only have about 1 minute left here. Let me ask, how does this activity help us think about the intersecting identities that people carry, that they hold about who they are? And knowing that no one is of one identity, how does this make you reflect on yourself and your interactions with other people?
Bobby?
I'm going to pick up on the race question, because I think there is a, maybe danger is too strong a word, but it can be a problem that we are unaware that we are so, I mean, I grew up like you did in a very white community, and a person of color was a real anomaly. There's a sense in which white is normal and other things are not. And this is a, I think, a harmful mindset for us. So I didn't put it on my list either, that I was a white, I did put I was wife, mother, and the sort of usual thing, but I didn't put that either. So just an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. Sue? Mom?
Something that I noticed when you asked us to put down what we were born into, there were only two on my list. And that leads me to think that we have a lot of control over what our identity really is, that we can change different situations in our life to have a better identity.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and a lot of times if we are in an identity that is in that, the norm, so whiteness is an example, being able-bodied without any disabilities, a lot of times that's a blind spot for people. And it's not something that they put down, but it greatly impacts how we experience the world and how we experience other people. Gender has become a central issue and a conflicted issue right now, because it was always assumed that sex equaled gender, meaning if you're born of a certain sex, you will be of a certain gender identity. And now that we have people who are really claiming their gender identity for themselves, that's become another issue around thinking about who we are, who we feel like we are in the world, and how, or who we feel like we are inside, and how we choose to present ourselves in the world. That's another one of those examples of identity that has become confusing for a lot of people. What I would encourage around race, around gender identity, around religion, around ability, sexual orientation, all of these different identities, is for us to be curious, to be humble, and to seek to understand. And if we come from that place, there's an opportunity for connection with other people by coming from that place. If we come from a place of assuming that we know things about people because of certain identities that they have, that's usually a wall for us that we're not able to connect on there.
I'm told that John Michael has a comment for us. If you want to unmute and share it, or I don't know, Sarah, if you wanted to share it, if he does not feel like he can unmute.
I don't have the comment.
Okay. So we are at...
I'm sorry. Here, we do have another one from Jesse. What do you mean by whiteness?
I think that's a good question within itself. And because of time, I don't think we have an opportunity to dig into that, but that's a really important question, and one that may seem easy for some people, but that's the definition that has changed over time through different generations of what it means to be white, who's accepted as being white, whether it's based on how you appear to other people or how you identify for yourself. So it's a complex question, Jesse. I'm glad you asked about that. We don't have time to dig into that right now, but that's a great example of the complexity that's required to truly be culturally humble, is to be able to ask those, when someone asks a question like that, to open ourselves up to say, I hadn't thought about that question before. Or yes, let's dig into that. I've thought about that too. Let's talk about that on a deeper level. Unfortunately, we don't have time for that today. We will be talking more about cultural humility next week, particularly in the concept of immigrants and refugees. So we can hold on to that, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more next week. I don't know for sure what Dr. Block has planned, but that could be a component of that. And thanks for asking the question. I know church starts in 10 minutes, and I have two kids who leave for the mission trip in 10 minutes too, which is why they're dressed the way they are. So I cannot stay long afterwards. I would love to dialogue with anyone who wants to stay, but I also want to send my kids off on their mission trip. So thank you all for being here today. Thank you for participating. And if you have any quick questions or comments, I'd love to talk to you at the end. Thanks, everybody.